Hey, listeners, and welcome to the Beyond Writing Podcast, brought to you by Bright Little Light Press. I'm your host, Dacre Carey, and with us today is guest host Kay Rhodes.
Hello.
He's really here as a talking mouthpiece for writers who are unfamiliar with this topic, so hopefully he can ask some questions that you guys at home might want to know about today's topic. Today's topic is author platform.
What's an author platform?
Exactly. So author platform is this thing that people talk a lot about, but a lot of people don't have a clear idea of what that means. And I think it fills a lot of aspiring authors with a little bit of dread and apprehension as they think, what is this thing that I am supposed to have? And how am I supposed to create it? To give you some background, I looked into where this concept originally came from. It's been around since I got into publishing in the 2000s, and I looked up the history of it. It actually dates back into the 1990s and started out as a concept related to nonfiction books. The idea was that before the internet was really a big way of reaching people, publishers wanted authors to have a platform, so they wanted them to be in the public eye in some way in order to be able to sell books more effectively. So publishers really want to make their money back on the books they sell, and in order to do that, they want the writers to have a big audience or a large platform of people they might be able to reach and sell books to. The concept of author platform is a little bit confusing or controversial. Different people have different ideas of what it means. Some publishers may mean something different when they say it versus an agent or another publisher or an author. So it's kind of a moving target, and it can be a little difficult for new authors to really wrap their heads around it because there are very different approaches to it and different expectations of what it should include. So one way of thinking about it is publishers and agents are looking for writers who have credentials and authority, who are visible to their target audience as an expert, a thought leader, or a professional. To sort of start to unpack that, visibility means, where does your work regularly appear? How many people see it? How does it spread? Where does it spread? In the example from last week's podcast, when we were talking about non-traditional publishing platforms, we mentioned a woman on Patreon who had a lot of followers, and she had been a magazine writer before she started writing fiction full-time. So her author platform could include the magazines where she had done writing for previously, and really the subscriber base, any place she could demonstrate that she was able to reach people or that she was visible to people. I know some writers who are tech writers who have been found or who have as an author platform really visible tech websites like Wired or Ars Technica or Gizmodo. There's really any place that you can be visible to people and people are accustomed to seeing you or will look for your work.
I think one note about that might be that past work in magazine stuff like Wired is very valuable to convincing a publisher that you're capable of being a professional and doing good work and actually finishing. But a lot of people who read magazines don't pay a lot of attention to the particular author of the articles, or they may notice it but not particularly follow that person. So it works in the state of a public author platform for when dealing with publishers, but it doesn't necessarily translate into, if you're going the indie route, the people who have followed you on the people who read your stuff in the magazine won't necessarily follow you to the whatever you're writing next because they might not know that it was you who wrote it.
I think there's a degree of truth in that, but I think you're underestimating. Me, for example, a lot of my favorite writers with various publications, I know their names. I see their articles over and over again, and I can tell, like, for example, let's not get into specifics. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there are certain names I recognize when I see publications. If I see a certain type of article or it reads a certain way, I know, oh, it's this author that I like. I think that you're underestimating people's ability to follow that.
I think it's a little... Some authors you absolutely do know from in their magazine stuff, and it's obvious and clear, and some it's like, it was a good article. I have no idea who wrote it.
Moving on. So, for visibility, you can't just say, I have this audience or I am visible in this place, you have to be able to prove it. So if you're listing as a source of visibility, an email list that you maintain, web traffic that you get, blog comments that you get, you need to be able to demonstrate this by showing a publisher or agent, look, here, I'm not just saying this, here's my web traffic data, here is data from my email list, including open reports and things like that from email campaigns, or you need to have quality visibility. So if you have high-profile reviews or A-listers in your genre who will talk about your work and will promote it, that can count a lot versus quantity. But in either case, you need to be able to prove it. You need to be able to put your money where your mouth is. You can't just say, I'm very visible. You need to like have data to back that up. So the other piece of that initial sentence was target audience. So you need to be visible for the work that you're trying to sell. It's not enough to just have visibility. Your visibility ought to also be relevant to the work you're doing. For example, if you've got visibility, authority, and proven reach among orthodontists, but you're trying to sell a Fortune 500 book, that visibility is relatively meaningless. So it's important to be able to connect that back to your target audience. If you're doing something with a bit more broad appeal, like a book that's based in pop culture or a general fiction book that a lot of people might enjoy reading, then your visibility and your target audience don't have to line up perfectly. But if it's a more niche type of content, then it's really important that your target audience and your visibility are in the same area. So I think one misconception a lot of writers have is that platform is about bringing attention to yourself. That's actually not all there is to it. I know a lot of people think, oh, I need social media followers, I need blog followers. The sheer number of followers you have does not a platform make. It's not just about quantity, it's also about quality, like we had touched on previously. So the types of things that an agent or a publisher is going to look for will depend on some factors like the type of book you're pitching. For example, if you're pitching a fiction versus a nonfiction book, they may have different criteria that they want in an author platform. The genre of the book may affect what they're looking for. The subject matter may affect the specific things they want you to have in an author platform. It's really sort of a moving target, like I said earlier, and it's tough when you're trying to predict what they're going to want. You really need to put yourself in the minds of a publisher or an agent and go, if I were this person, what would I want me to be able to demonstrate?
I think one way to think about the quantity versus quality is you're likely to have a lot of people who are willing to listen to you, but very few of them who are true fans of yours. And it's the true fans that you need to work on working with and building up greater numbers of.
So to help you get an idea of what types of things a publisher might look for, I found one publisher breaking down the author platform into a pie chart. So they're looking for a certain amount of percentage for each of these areas. So their biggest area that they want an author platform to have is expertise. And they wanted 25% of your author platform to be represented by your expertise in the subject matter.
What does that mean, practically?
I'll break all that down in a minute. Let me just go through and list the pie chart elements, and then we'll go into more detail about each of them. The next biggest category was ability to execute, and they wanted that to represent 15% of your author platform. The next item is existing readership, and they gauged that one at 10%. The next one is personality, which they gauged at 10%. The next one is previous books, which they gauged at 10%. The next one is previous media, which they gauged at 10%. The next one is social media, which they gauged at 10%. And the final part of the pie chart was contacts, which they rated at 10%. So as you can see, social media, which is where a lot of aspiring authors hang themselves up, they really spend a lot of time on that. It really only represents a small part of what a publisher is looking for in an author platform. For this publisher, it was 10%. So let's break down some of the individual areas. For expertise, this is the publisher who created this pie chart was basing it on people pitching nonfiction books, but she talked about ways in which fiction also, ways in which these areas also mattered in fiction. So for expertise, for example, how well do you know the thing you're writing about? It doesn't matter quite as much in fiction books, but it still can bring a lot to the content, from getting the details right, which matters, to professional organizations that you might be in contact with that are related to the subject matter. There's a lot of... If you're writing about something you don't know about and you get a lot of the details wrong, it's going to get you negative reviews, it will cost you readers, bad press, and publishers and agents will not want to touch your material. So for one example she provided of this, she had a client who had written a thriller whose central focus was about an illegally obtained organ, and the writer of this book was actually someone who worked in the medical transplant field. So she knew a lot about moving organs around, organ transplants, and she was able to get a lot of the details correct in the illicit thriller aspect. And she also had a lot of contacts in the medical field, which was helpful for consultation purposes to establish that, yes, the details are correct. And also, it's a built-in reader base.
As opposed to the 90% of books written about hackers.
Oh, yeah. All the hackers. Oh, God. This is horrible. And I have to admit, I myself had started a book once about hackers. But if you write about hackers and you actually include content about what the hackers are doing in your book, you better sure know what hackers do. Most people don't. The next piece was ability to execute. So this means, can you demonstrate that you're able to follow through? A lot of writers have a misconception that when they have finished writing the book, they're done. That's not true. Working on a draft is only one part of the process. After you get an agent or a publisher or both, you're going to have to edit, revise, communicate with the agent and the publisher to move your book through the process, and you're also going to have to market the bejesus out of it. So this means you're going to have to do public appearances, events. There are a variety of expectations around you doing what you need to do after they buy your book. If you have prior projects that you can point to that illustrate your ability to execute, that's going to go a long way toward convincing them that you're a good risk. This is sort of like an analogy that I use, Kay and I talk about sometimes, when people are trying to get a credit. So if you have a good credit score, it's proof that you're a good risk, and lenders are more likely to want to give you credit. If you have a poor credit score, it's proof that you're not a very good risk, and lenders aren't going to want to give you credit. So the ability to execute, if you can point at a prior project you've executed well, it's like having a good credit score. And publishers are going to say, okay, this person knows what they're doing. They've proven that they can do this responsibly. So they're a better risk than some unknown who we just don't have any data on.
What was the percentage for that?
That one was 15%. So the next one is existing readership. This one's pretty easy. If you have an existing audience, can you market your books to them? It sort of matters if they're in the same genre, because it's not uncommon for a really respected writer to be able to cross genres, but for an unknown writer to have like one or two books in one genre and then to be switching to a different genre, you may not be established enough that your readers are willing to follow you. So it helps if you're in the same genre, or if you have a lot of books and your readers might want to follow you to a different genre. Personality is the next criteria. This one, I think, makes a lot of people apprehensive. And people, I think, much like people who are writers don't want to think about the business side and about marketing, I think people think that the idea of personality being a thing on which your author platform is based is kind of crap. But it is. It's reality. If you are going to be doing media appearances or radio interviews or even just Q&As online, like AMAs on Reddit, or AMAs are on Reddit, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to be doing Q&As online, whatever it is, you need to have a personality that people want to engage with. If you are kind of a boring person, you may fall a little flat in the personality department. It's not just that you need to be likable, though. There are some personalities that are very polarizing. A lot of people don't like them, but because they're so polarizing, they drive a lot of press. So you don't just have to be likable. You can also be an abrasive person who people don't like if you're somebody people want to talk about or want to read more so they can argue about it.
Hmm, what does that sound like?
Not to,
Next topic.
To find a point on it. Actually, I hate to say this, I really do. I grew up in Indiana where Rush Limbaugh was a very popular figure, and he is a very polarizing figure. And yet, he has a massive following, and I bet if he were to want to get a book deal, he'd be able to do it pretty easily.
Pretty sure he already has.
Yeah, that might be true. Okay. Previous books was the next criteria. Do you have previous books and book sales that you can point to? If you have book sale data, that's great. That will help indicate that you're a good risk. If you have previous books that have done poorly, that's not necessarily a black mark against you. If you can point out that you know the areas in which you did poorly and you have a plan to improve them this time around. So if you had a flop before, but you can say, I learned from it, and these are the five areas where I really didn't execute well previously, and I'm going to do that better this time in these three ways, then having bad book data doesn't hurt you. But if you have no previous book data, again, it's sort of like that credit score thing. If there is no data about your history, then you're more of an unknown risk, and people are not going to want to take a chance on you.
Rush Limbaugh, it turns out, has quite a few books.
I am not surprised by this. One thing that I was planning to break down more later, but since we're talking about it, I'll talk about it now. So, personality can be a huge factor in getting a big book deal, and if you have a large author platform based on your personality, i.e. if you have a large cult of personality following, you can get a book deal that's much bigger than the average person. And even if you're not a good writer, you can still get a book deal, and the publisher will just hire a ghostwriter to work on the story with you so that the writing will be good quality. I don't want to name any names, but there are definitely famous people who have done this. And, you know, recently, not to say that he didn't write any of his stuff he's done before, but the Obamas recently got a huge book deal, like unprecedented book deal, for a book that they're planning to publish in the next couple of years. There was just an article about it in Publishers Weekly last week. It's really impressive. So if you have a large following, then book deals are easy to come by.
And you probably don't need this podcast.
Yeah, no kidding. So the next criteria is previous media. This one's a little trickier. It's about what types of media appearances or interactions have you done before, or do you currently do? For example, have you been on radio shows or TV shows or podcasts? And what were those experiences like, and how did they drive interest? So this could be a couple of different things. In one way, it could be related to prior book sales if you have them. So if you've done previous media tours for your prior book sales, then a publisher may want to look at where you did media before, and if you have any sales data related to that media, how did it drive sales? Or just, are you willing to do it, and do you come across well in previous media experiences? It can also be something you do that is not related to book publishing. So if you are somebody who does regular videos on YouTube, for example, and you have a big media following, a publisher can look at those videos and get an idea of how you're going to come across in media when you do marketing for your books. And it'll really give them information to work with when they're deciding whether or not you're a good risk. Again, that risk whole risk thing. Then there's the social media piece. So this is the one that a lot of authors really focus too much of their time on, I think. And this is where Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest and Google Plus and all those places come in. And this one is really about the number of followers and the quality of engagement with your followers. So it's not just a quantity thing. It doesn't matter if you have 500,000 followers. What matters is, do you have regular interactions with those followers? Are they people who seem interested in what you're saying? If you just go follow a bunch of people and they follow you back but you never have any interactions, and there's no evidence that they're actually paying any attention to you, that's sort of useless. What they really want to see is that you have followers who actually care about you. So this is sort of the difference between having fans and just talking into the void. Finally, there's contacts. So there, this is another sort of quality-quantity thing. Do you have mailing lists? Do you have organizations you belong to that you can leverage as potential audience? How many contacts do you have? Then there's also a qualitative piece to this. So do you have any contacts who are A-listers, who have a really large audience following, who will be willing to share your book or information about you and get you in front of a wider audience? Or are there any thought leaders in your area? And are there any thought leaders in your genre who can get your work in front of people? This could be something direct, like if you happen to be friends with a celebrity who can say, oh, my friend wrote this book and it's awesome, that's a good qualitative contact. But it could also be something like a book review from the New York Times or something that's a little more attainable from a qualitative source that gets you in front of a lot of people, but isn't necessarily a direct contact. So while these criteria were set out with a nonfiction writer in mind, they hold true for fiction writers pretty well as well. So what are the pieces you actually need to have an author platform, or at least to work on building one? One of the things I don't see mentioned enough is you need a website. A real website. Your domain probably ought to be your pen name, although it doesn't have to be. If you want to host different books on it, it could be the name of your book series. The problem with getting too deep into book-specific website names is that over time, you're not building audience to all of your books. You're only building them to one book-specific title or series. But if you want to optimize for that book title, then that can be a viable strategy. If you don't know a lot about website optimization, probably just stick with your name or something you're going to use to represent your brand. Another thing to think about is how your genre will be represented on your website. If you want to go with something that isn't just your name, it ought to be something that's representative of your genre. So if you're doing an urban fantasy, it might have a different name than if you're doing fiction or, you know, thrillers, something that's tied in with the genre you're writing about.
Werewolvesandvampires.net. Detectiveswithknives.com.
.com. So, yeah, it's important to have it tie in with your genre if you're using something that's not just your author name. And your website ought to have a blog on it. You can syndicate that blog to various places. For example, your Amazon author page can actually pull in blog posts, so it's constantly getting fresh content, and if your viewers are buying one of your books and they click on the name of the author on your Amazon page, it'll take them to your author page where they can see all this content, get a sense for who you are as a person. And this is one of the ways you can really convert fans into super fans, is sort of by being out there and communicating with them.
Just as a note for the non-geeks, the syndicating your blog, every blog platform out there has a built-in thing called an RSS feed. And that's basically a version of your blog for computers, and RSS readers and sites like Amazon can ingest that part of your blog, and basically you just point Amazon at it and it'll take care of it.
Yeah, I guess that could have sounded too technical. What it means really is when you go to your Amazon author page, you put in the website URL for your blog, and it'll automatically pull in those blog posts whenever you make new ones. Very cool thing. It ought to be tied to your social media accounts, so you should have your social media accounts posted somewhere on your website, preferably somewhere easy for people to find.
On every page, usually in the header or footer.
Exactly. And if you have something that's a blogging platform and you want your blog front and center on your site, then you could have widgets bringing in your social media posts onto your site so people can get an idea of what types of things you would post on social media when they go to your site. It's not required, but it's a nice thing that can help you gain traction. Sort of depends on how you want to use your site. There are different ways you can go with a website. You could have a static site that's got your books front and center, or you could host it more as a blog where the communication piece is front and center. There are arguments for doing it both ways. It really depends on how you're trying to communicate with your readers. Another piece you really ought to have tied in with your website is a mailing list. It's a really valuable tool to be able to capture readers and communicate with them on a regular basis. A reader isn't just a reader for one book. You really want to build a brand, so you're communicating with them as you write new books. You can reach out to them for reviews when you need reviews. You can alert people of events. You can propel your new book launches to higher heights by alerting your existing readers about them. There's a lot of value in having a mailing list and integrating it with your website. There is something that Kay will talk about because it's one of his personal pet peeves, which is your email.
It's trivial to get your own domain. Like, you go to hover.com, you put in the domain you want, and hopefully it's available, you buy it.
And when you say domain, you mean website address.
Yes, like yahoo.com is a domain.
Exactly.
But time and again, I see people from all professions, not just authors, they'll get a domain name, they'll get it up on a website host somewhere, and then their email address will be, you know, bob@verizon.net. This is a terrible idea for many ways. A, it doesn't make you look professional. You just took the email address that your, you know, ISP at home gave to you instead of actually using one for your domain. And also, if you ever move and Verizon isn't available anymore, now you've got Bob at, you know, Comcast.net. Like, no, just be professional, use a domain name, and every single web host out there offers a very simple interface for hosting your email address. Usually it's included with hosting the name. If not, it might be like $5 more or something. It's worth every penny. Just, you know, be yourname@yourdomainname.com or...
So, for example, with Bright Little Light Press, our domain is actually brightlittlelight.press, and our email address, our general email, is hello@brightlittlelight.press. And for me, as a personal writer, as a freelance writer, my personal website is my name, and my email address at my website is myinitials@myname.com. And that's my address that I've been using for 12 years now. I've gone through a couple of different domain hosts, and I was able to easily just switch the email hosting over to a new host. So the email traveled with me, and it shows that you really are investing in yourself as a professional. So in another podcast, I think we'll go into more detail in the practical piece of things you can do to build your website and your social media awareness to sort of build your author brand. It's only one piece of the author platform, but it's an important piece and we can't ignore it. So the idea of coming up with all this stuff and having it ready before you approach a publisher is really intimidating to a lot of authors. You don't actually have to have all this stuff built up before you get your first book under your belt. A lot of this actually comes with publishing. So you publish a book, you engage with readers, you build a following, and over time, you establish that author platform. It's not something that comes ready-made. It's not something that you can buy overnight. It's something that you have to invest in as a long-term strategy. This is one area in which it really makes sense for people to kick off their careers as indie authors and really start to build that following. Then down the road, you can take that to publishers and say, look, I have a following. I have an author platform. I'm established. I have a proven history of execution, and really demonstrate all these things that they're looking for.
This is also one of the downsides to being an established writer who starts a new pen name, because it's essentially,
starting from scratch.
You've got an author platform, but none of it counts.
It's funny you should say that, because that's one of the challenges that our authors at Bright Little Light are facing. They're writing under pen names, so they're all basically starting from scratch right now. So this is a very relevant and timely podcast for what is happening here for our authors. So how do you build an author platform? There's sort of three pieces to this. There's publishing or distributing quality work. In outlets you want to be identified with. That your target audience reads. So the first piece of that is producing a body of work on your own platform that gathers followers. This could be a book that you self-publish on Amazon. It could be a blog that you're maintaining and you have blog followers. It's something that you are building yourself and you're not... It's something that you are building yourself on a platform you control, or contributing to a platform in your field. So for example, when Kay and I traveled a few years ago, we were contributing to adventure travel forums, and we had very established reader bases there with actual data on numbers of viewers and comments to our travel writing. So producing a body of work on your own platform that gathers followers is usually a long-term process. It's not something you can do overnight. And those platforms might be something like a blog or an email newsletter or a social network or even something that's not in writing. Could be a podcast or a video series that you do or digital downloads that you produce. It's really a flexible criteria, and the goal is just to get your content out into the world, into the hands of people who are interested in consuming it. So the next piece of this is in outlets that you want to be identified with. So really think about the places where you want your work to show up and go after those outlets. It might be a magazine in a genre that you're writing in. So if you're writing science fiction and fantasy, you might go after science fiction and fantasy magazine. If you're writing nonfiction, you might go after a nonfiction publication in your field. It's really about outlets that you want to be identified with. You don't necessarily want to get picked up places where you don't want to be identified. For example, you don't necessarily want to be writing for a tabloid and building followers there because your reputation might suffer a little bit. Unless what you're writing is some sort of pop culture stuff that having a lot of sensational content will actually drive readers, in which case, sure, be identified with that. Then the final piece is that your target audience reads. So if your target audience isn't where you're distributing your work, that's a problem. That's not going to help you build an author platform that will serve you in your career. If you are writing about travel stuff on a travel website and you actually want to write fiction as an author, the travel stuff is not going to help your author platform. That's sort of a completely separate thing. Your target audience may read that, but probably not. That's a pretty niche area. So you really want to reach your target audience where they live. So other things you can do to help build your author platform include speaking at or attending events where you extend your network of contacts. Remember, contacts are 10% of your author platform. So it could be being part of a panel at a convention or a writer's conference, or doing events at your local bookstore or library. Any place you can really network with people and build your contacts. Find meaningful ways to engage with and develop your target audience. This, I think, is one of the most difficult concepts for any writer to really understand and find good ways to implement. It's kind of a deep topic, so I think we're not going to get into much detail in it here in this podcast. There are a lot of articles on the internet about ways to engage with and develop your target audience, but think about it this way. It's sort of a two-way interaction. You're not just talking at people. You really want to talk with them, understand where they're coming from, speak to them directly. We'll go into this maybe more in a future podcast. I think there's a lot to be said around this particular element. Finally, if you're having trouble building an author platform on your own, one option is to partner with peers or influencers who are well known in your area to tackle a new project or extend your visibility. So you could co-write a book with someone.
More useful in the nonfiction space, usually, but
that's not necessarily true. There are a couple of thriller and crime fiction writers lately have been partnering with unknowns to help them get their name out there through various avenues, masterclasses, and contests and things. So there are ways to partner with known people, not just in nonfiction.
On that topic, though, for anyone interested in tech writing, there are a ton of collaborative tech books, like programming books and stuff like that. And in my experience, those authors very frequently happily embrace help because it's a lot of work to write, especially, you know, a big authoritative reference book. They frequently have multiple authors because there's a lot to do.
Yep, that's a good point. So again, just to reiterate, platform is something that grows out of your body of work or from producing great work. It's very difficult or next to impossible to build a platform for work that doesn't exist yet, unless you're some kind of celebrity. So what that means is, if you are writing a book now, you can maybe work on social media contacts, but really you're not going to be building a platform. Don't fool yourself into thinking that you are.
It also means that the first book is going to be the most work.
It is. That's always the case. The first book is always the most work. One thing to keep in mind, if you are intimidated by the idea of not having an author platform ready and you don't want to approach a big publisher or an agent, you can think about small presses. They're typically a lot more interested in the quality of your work and not necessarily in the quantity they're likely to sell. So it's not uncommon for a writer to get started with a smaller press and get a few books under their belt, start to work on building an author platform, particularly through having a high-quality work, and then have the opportunity to sign with one of the bigger New York publishers.
Yeah, just be careful and read your contract so you're not selling away the next 10 years of your life.
Definitely. And this is where it's really important to understand the difference between a legitimate small press and predatory publishers. We had gone into detail about predatory publishers a couple of episodes ago. So if you haven't listened to that, I recommend going back and listening to it. And maybe we'll do another podcast in the future about small presses to give you an idea of where those differences are. So this is not something that's one size fits all. Some people are going to have an easier time building a platform than other people. It depends on what your life is like. If you hold a highly recognized position and you have a powerful network and influence, you'll have an easier time building a platform. That's easy. Again, to use an example, the Obamas. That's a highly recognized position, so they've got a powerful network of influencers, not just in themselves, but in people they've worked with in the past 8 years of government. If in your regular life you know key influencers, if you have friends in high places, you'll have an easier time building a platform because they can help you boost your reach and you'll be able to piggyback on those connections. If you are associated with powerful communities, that can be a big way to build platform fast. This one also warrants a little bit more exploration. It's really important to keep in mind that belonging to a community doesn't necessarily mean that you have the support of that community. I think a lot of authors will join communities with the idea of promoting themselves, and really that's a very self-serving way of approaching community interactions that's not going to get you readers.
It's also actually probably going to get you negative readers because people will see you as marketing yourself rather than just being a participating person in that community.
Absolutely, and a lot of communities have really strict standards around doing that.
Yeah, there's a number of communities I'm involved with online where there are definitely retailers that are in these online forums, but because the retailers participate so strongly in the community, the community doesn't mind when they mention their own stuff. But they, at the same time, have very strict rules about people just coming on and promoting product X. So you have to participate to be considered one of the gang when it comes time for you to actually go, by the way, I have something relevant to sell.
Exactly. So you can't just show up in a community or say, I am a member of this community, and think that that's going to count toward building your platform. It might just get you blacklisted.
Show up long in advance and participate.
Yeah. Or whenever you show up, just keep in mind that this is not something you can claim right now. You're going to have to be an active member of that community for a while before you can really count it as part of building your author platform. Another thing that might make it easier for you to build your platform is if you have prestigious degrees or posts. That means if you have, you know, advanced degrees from well-respected universities, you're likely to have a certain amount of visibility in that community. And it may help you gain legitimacy in the eyes of publishers and agents and, even just promotion in the real world. As much as it sucks that there is snobbery around, oh, this is a Harvard graduate, oh, this is a Yale graduate, it still means something to be a part of one of those communities. Another way in which you might have an easier time building platform is if you're in public-facing work. So if you are routinely interacting with large quantities of people, then you'll have an easier time building platform. And this could be something like, I'm a news anchor or a weather person, or it could be I work in a coffee shop where we have a lot of regulars. That's going to be a smaller platform, but it's still public-facing work. So it's important to think of your author platform as a lifelong investment in your career as an author. You're not just trying to build this thing up to sell one book. This is something that you're going to work on over time, continually, as you continue to build and publish books. So maybe 10 books from now, 20 books from now, you're going to have a much more established author platform. But really, it's not just something you're doing for this one thing. It is a lifelong investment in your career as an author.
And that also relates back to the personality a bit. Be careful with what you say. You know, don't retweet or respond mad. Do follow the rules about waiting and saying something thoughtful, because 10 years from now, some people will still be holding a grudge because of what a jerk you were.
Yeah, it's important to remember. I think we don't say this enough. The internet is forever, guys. So things can and will follow you around. So back to this piece of investing in your career as an author. It's important to not rely on publishers or agents to help you find and keep your audience. You as an author really need to own that. Your publisher can help put you in contact with some of these places or your agent, but you need to be in control of those contacts and relationships so that you can maintain them going forward, even if you sever the relationship with your publisher or your agent. This is really important when it comes to large publishers. Some of the big New York publishers will want to own your channels and your platform. I am not going to name any names, but I know some of the New York publishers will own your social media account and may even have their own people posting social media updates for you. So it's important for you as an author to understand the power of having your own author platform and not let people take it away from you. This is an issue if you want to change publishers later, or even if you want to express your own views and you're not allowed to because the publisher says, no, you can't do that because you're also representing the publisher. Or alternately, if the publisher is expressing views on your social media channels that you do not hold. There's a lot of slippery slopes around this concept. And it's not just about social media either. It's about mailing lists and even personal contacts you make with bookstores or media events. You really ought to get information whenever you're in any of those situations so that you can stay in contact with those people later. So if you go do bookstore events, get the name of the person who set up the event at the bookstore. That way down the road, if you're representing yourself or if you switch to a different publisher, you still have that bookstore's contact information and you can say, hey, remember when I came like 2 years ago on this book tour? I want to come back. I've got this new book coming. And the same thing goes particularly for media, because media contacts are really difficult to obtain and nurture. So if you can get those contacts yourself and keep in touch with them on an ongoing basis, that is going to serve your career so well, versus just letting your publisher control that, and then if you ever leave that publisher, you no longer have those contacts. So how you're going to develop your platform will vary depending on you as a person. There's several pieces that go into that. One piece is your unique story and message. That's one of the awesome things about all of us as individuals, and I think one of the things that makes room for so many writers in the world. Everybody's different. Everybody's got their own story or their own viewpoint that they're bringing to the things they create. So really own your unique story and your message and make that a part of your platform. Another thing to think about is, what are your unique strengths and qualities? You may be really good at organization, for example, but maybe not so good at the personality piece. So own the organization. Like, really focus on keeping track of data that helps you get further, or make a spreadsheet of contacts that you can nurture consciously instead of just having organic conversations. Whatever thing it needs to be for you, figure it out. Leverage it. And finally, understand your target readership. This is something that really we will go on and on about over and over again. Knowing your target audience and understanding your target readership is key to building your author platform. You really ought to know who is going to read your book. It's part of what you're going to have to do for marketing anyway, to be able to reach these people effectively, but it's also something you should do to nurture your target audience. Another thing that I like people to think about, there's the old adage, write what you know. I know it's kind of difficult when you're writing fiction, especially if you're writing fantasy or some other really fantastical fiction, but write what you know. Like, write from life, write from experiences you have, or write from personalities you've encountered. When you write what you know, things are going to come across as more authentic. You're going to be able to leverage emotions and language that's more relatable to other people and really tap into the things that connect us as humans versus just making up a bunch of stuff. That's not going to be as authentic. People see through that. You can be a really good writer and make up a bunch of stuff, but without being able to connect to the authentic human experience, you're not going to really grab people. If you're looking for something a little more practical and concrete, I found a blog post where someone has put together a schedule. So every day, every weekday, they would spend 2 hours with a different focus on each day. So 1 hour of those 2 hours is always on writing, because no matter how much you're working on marketing and building your platform and all the other things that go into the business side, you also need to keep writing. And the other hour of the schedule is broken down into various types of tasks, like writing a blog post or reaching out to social media contacts, things you can do to really start building your author platform. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, and keep in mind, it's not a hard and fast rule. It's just one way for you to think about breaking down the tasks and really being methodical about how you're reaching out and trying to build your reach. All right, so I hope that practical advice helps you out a little bit. And if you have specific questions, feel free to reach out to us. On Twitter, you can get us at BLL Press, and we also have a Facebook account, or you can get to us through our website. We are happy to support and nurture up-and-coming writers, so please feel free to reach out. So that's all we've got for today, folks. Join us next time as we talk about how publishers decide what books they're gonna buy. Bye!
Bye.
Talk to you later, people.